This episode of Shameless is brought to you by Betty's Burgers. Experience their new limited edition crispy chicken panko yuzu burger this Easter.
And welcome to Shameless, the pop culture podcast for smart people who love dumb stuff. You're joined, as always, by Melbourne writers Michelle Andrews, that would be me, and Zara McDonald, that would be you.
Hello, and to my right, we have pop culture journalist Eilish Gilligan.
Hello.
Hi, Gil. Coming up on today's show, Kate Middleton shared her cancer diagnosis and what is there to learn from all of it. Plus, Euphoria Season 3 might actually not happen after all.
I mean, according to us. No facts in that.
Why the documentary Quiet on Set is all over your social media feeds. Rebel Wilson's memoir is about to be out in the world and all eyes are on Chapter 23 and Sacha Baron Cohen. And Gwyneth Paltrow has announced a war on dill. But first, Zara McDonald, how was your week?
I had a great week. Thank you for asking, as always.
To check in.
Always good to check in, and all I'll give you is great week. Thanks so much. Moving on to the recommendations.
Ooh.
No, I've got a couple of things I wanted to mention today, if that's all right.
Yeah.
The first one is actually, I will say, not authentically my own recommendation. It is one that I got from Eilish, and it is one of the best things I've consumed in so long. So, Eilish, I'm going to make us do this in tandem because it's the podcast Who Trolled Amber.
I'm listening to this at the moment, halfway
Eilish,
through.
You posted on your Instagram the other day being like, I can't believe this is not getting as much traction as it should. And I completely agree. Essentially, I'm going to kind of butcher this, but it's an investigation into kind of what happened during the Johnny Depp Amber Heard trial when there was so much internet activity against Amber Heard. And it looks into kind of whether there were bot farms or who may have created systems or bought systems or manipulated systems in order for a whole wave of the internet to turn against Amber Heard. Anything to add, Eilish?
No, but I will say that I listened to the last episode this morning before I got to work, and I literally found myself rewinding and re-listening to sections again to make sure that I got it right. Like, it is that fascinating, that like engaging. I could not recommend it higher.
I'm halfway through episode 4 and they've just brought in another case. It's actually a homicide trial.
Yep.
And from this point on, I am like so gripped. I was already really into it, but I think it really uses Amber Heard and Johnny Depp's trial to be a magnifying glass into something that happens a lot on the internet that we really don't talk about enough.
Well, I think I felt quite naive listening to this about how terrifying it is that essentially entire movements on the internet can be bought is really the hypothesis.
Public sentiment,
not even the hypothesis.
Yeah.
Public sentiment can be bought and a lot of it can be fake.
Yeah.
And the way this can impact political campaigns or whatever it might be, this is not just about Johnny Depp and Amber Heard. It is about so much more. But I think the way that it was used against Amber Heard is tragic. I actually can't think of any other word for it. It is terrifying and tragic. So if you are not listening to it, listen to it. Eilish is right. It is ridiculous. It's not getting talked about more in the media.
I agree.
Ridiculous. It is insane.
Can we also give a shout out? The company behind it, they've actually done a lot of great work. I've recommended some of their podcasts on Shameless before. It's Tortoise Media. I really like their ethos. Their slogan is, we're building a different type of newsroom for a slower, wiser news. Get the news not when it happens, but when it's ready.
I love that.
Yeah, Tortoise do incredible stuff. If you look up Who Trolled Amber and scroll to the end of that feed, they were also behind some of the shows.
They did Sweet Bobby, didn't they?
Yeah, they did Sweet Bobby,
that show.
And it's excellent. They've done so, so many good ones, and I just think Tortoise Media is doing incredible things. So I just wanted to be their cheerleader.
Amazing. One other quick recommendation is actually one of our own, but I have to get this out. If you guys are missing out in conversation episodes, which I know you are because you're constantly asking Michelle and I to do them, we're
tired.
We're honestly busy enough. nothing worse than someone saying how busy they are. But we are doing interviews over on our book club. It is the Tastemaker series. It's amazing. Our latest episode with Julia Busuttil Nishimura is amazing. I've recommended her stuff on the show so often. She's one of my favorite home cooks. I've recommended her cookbooks. I've recommended her recipes. She is the best. So if you're looking for that kind of content, get that in your ears. The last thing I will say is do not confuse Pop Crave and Poo Crave.
Oh my God. Okay, I'm so glad you raised this. So yesterday, I get back from a lunch break. Zara, one of the rare days that we didn't want to have the same lunch. We normally go out on a little lunch date together, go get our meal. You're like, nah, I'm feeling like, what did you have?
I think I had a
burrito bowl.
A burrito bowl.
I felt like a chicken wrap. So we went our separate ways. And in that very short period of time that Zara was left to her own devices, she was led astray, dear listeners. I come back, I walk into the office.
I was waiting at the door for her.
Chicken wrap in hand. And my beloved Zaz goes to me, have you seen this? And I go, you better not be talking about the video of Taylor and Travis on holiday in the Bahamas. You go, look at this.
They were falling off the swing. They were. It wasn't them. There was this hilarious video and I said to Michelle, this is the funniest thing I've ever seen in my whole life. It was basically Travis and Taylor sitting on this big swing in the Bahamas, swinging and then both falling headfirst into the water. And I thought this is hilarious. Waited at the front door for Michelle to get back. And then she said, hun, that's Poo Crave, not Pop Crave. I said, well, fuck.
Poo Crave is so funny. If you're not on Twitter, they're essentially, as you might imagine, just like a spoof account of Pop Crave. And some of the stuff they put out is so funny. I did fall. I think the only reason I could make you feel like an idiot is because I felt like an idiot on the weekend. I got very excited when I opened my phone and it said Ariana Grande has split from Ethan Slater. And I went, what an amazing story to talk about on the podcast.
Oh, wait, I saw that and then I Googled it and nothing was true. So I was like, ugh.
It was from Poo Crave.
Oh, my God. I need to look at the handle more.
It is very, like, sneaky of them, though. Just a little line missing from the second O to make it poo.
Anyway, how are you? What are you recommending?
I'm recommending two things. The first thing is American Nightmare on Netflix. I will say this is a true crime docuseries for the girlies.
Okay.
The girlies come out on top. I watched this with my cousin Carolyn and my little sister Evelyn last week. And it took me on a wild ride. I have never heard of such a bizarre story. Eilish, given you're the host of Stranger Than Fiction for our book club, this story is the definition of Stranger Than Fiction. I cannot believe this happened, but it did. And I just encourage everyone to watch it. It's not very gory. It's not super scary, but it is fascinating and it is in parts heartbreaking. And I want everyone to watch it because it's incredibly done.
Gosh, lots of recommendations for people today.
Yeah. So American Nightmare. I also have another one.
Yes, please.
The Anne Hathaway profile by Vanity Fair that went live 2 days ago. I read it in bed last night. I didn't think I could love Miguel Annie anymore. But I do.
I haven't read this yet.
It's really good. Can I read you a quote?
I would love you to.
She said, humiliation is such a rough thing to go through. The key is to not let it close you down. You have to stay bold. And it can be hard because you're like, if I stay safe, if I hug the middle, if I don't draw too much attention to myself, it won't hurt. But if you want to do that, don't be an actor. You're a tightrope walker. You're a daredevil. You're asking people to invest their time and their money and their attention and their care into you. So you have to give them something worth all of those things. And it's not costing you anything. What are you really offering them?
Ooh.
She really explores the time when she was hated by the public. She explores the rhetoric about her personality and about her maybe eagerness to please. And she's just a fascinating human being. I think you'll also love the fact that she rocked up earlier than the interviewer.
I always love that.
And then found a table in the cafe that would be best for the interviewer's audio recording.
Oh. I just love the era that Anne Hathaway is in. Like, I love that she is in it. I love that we love her. Going back through our Scandal series when we did her has just given me the softest spot in the world for that woman. So I cannot wait to read this when I have time today.
A bonus tidbit as well, Jeremy Strong makes a little cameo.
I think they're good mates, aren't they?
Yeah, Jeremy Strong, of course, is one of your favourite actors from Succession.
Oh, I would say favourite with an asterisk.
Yeah, he does the most Jeremy Strong thing possible in the middle of this profile. So a little Easter egg for the Succession fans.
Cannot wait. Shall we get into the quick and dirty today? Because we have a lot to cover.
We have so much to cover. Guys, the quick and dirty is the top five stories from the pop culture news cycle. Zara, lots of things to recommend this week. McDonald's,
nice.
What have you got for us?
All right, our first story, we are starting where you know we will start. Kate Middleton says she was diagnosed with cancer, is undergoing chemotherapy. That is from ABC News. Big time to fall on our swords, Michelle Elizabeth Andrews, because we have lots to unpack this week.
We do. We have a bit to own up to as well. So let's play a snippet from the very, very top. Here is what Kate Middleton announced this week.
It has been an incredibly tough couple of months for our entire family, but I've had a fantastic medical team who have taken great care of me, for which I'm so grateful. In January, I underwent major abdominal surgery in London, and at the time, it was thought that my condition was non-cancerous. The surgery was successful. However, tests after the operation found cancer had been present. My medical team therefore advised that I should undergo a course of preventative chemotherapy, and I'm now in the early stages of that treatment. This, of course, came as a huge shock, and William and I have been doing everything we can to process and manage this privately for the sake of our young family.
All right, so she came out, there was that announcement. It actually ran on the BBC. The BBC shot and filmed that themselves. It ran on their, network, and then obviously it was posted to social. The first place I wanted to start, I guess, is how we found out and how we felt.
I found out the first moment I woke up on Saturday morning. I was in bed and my stomach dropped. Just to sum it up, oh no.
Yes.
Oh no, and fuck.
Yeah.
Like what a horrible thing to have happened, I think, was my gut reaction. Eilish?
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't stop thinking about, I think it was like 2 weeks ago when we did our episode and I was here for like the first time. And you were like, oh, what do you think's going on? And I said something along the lines of like, it's all fun until you kind of reach the reason why she would be not appearing in public. And it's all bad reasons, I guess. And this just, I suppose, makes sense at the end of the day, which really sucks.
I actually woke up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom at like 5 o'clock in the morning.
That is so you coded. I've never heard a more Zara McDonald moment.
The people don't need to know the ins and outs of that. Endo girl, as you know. And I opened my phone and I saw it and I thought, 100%, like my stomach did drop. And it's, I think I went through a lot of thoughts at that time and I've gone through a lot of thoughts since. And in many ways, I'm very grateful that we're talking about this now on Wednesday, because I feel like that amount of time has given me a lot to think about. And I hope that we're able to kind of talk about all of that today. I think the first thing I noticed as well once I jumped online throughout Saturday in Australia was I felt very much that the commentary got very binary very quickly. I mean, such is the internet. It was people largely and very aggressively, I think, fell into two camps. It was, well, this has nothing to do with me and everything to do with the palace and how they led us astray or how they absolutely bungled this. Or the flip side of that was people saying we should never have been talking about this and the whole thing was so disappointing.
Yeah.
And anyone who was talking about this was awful. And I don't want to be this guy that sits on the fence, but I do think overwhelmingly the place I've come to in the last sort of 5 or 6 days is both of these things can be true and there is a lot more going on here, I think, than meets the eye.
100% agree. I think maturing is realizing that often multiple layers are behind any situation. Yeah. I think this situation has so many layers that are important to dissect and talk about. I have been thinking a lot about the way this story developed over the last month or two, and I think I really want to go back and do a bit of a retrospective on how things tracked, because I think it reveals a lot about the story and about, you know, our responses to it. Is it okay if we kind of map the contours of it
all
together?
Let's do it.
Cool. So first of all, I think it's really important as a starting point to say that this Kate Middleton story was and has been taking place on a stage alongside Diana and Harry, right? I think there are still so many people who truly believe that the palace played a role in the death of Diana.
Yes.
There are also people who have read Prince Harry's memoir, Spare, and have watched the Netflix docuseries alongside Meghan Markle, and believe Prince Harry's opinion that the palace is not to be trusted. Like, of most importance, Prince Harry has told the public specifically not to trust the headlines coming out of the palace.
Well, the communication.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. On top of that, I think the question of cancer was taken off the table as soon as this story broke, right? So as per Reuters on January 18, Britain's Princess of Wales has undergone successful planned abdominal surgery. No details of the surgery were given, but a palace spokesman said the condition was non-cancerous. I do think that's important. I think the framing of the situation from the jump as non-cancerous, unfortunately, was a green light for the public. Of course, we know that this was non-cancerous or considered non-cancerous, and that status was later changed upon later biopsies. It's one of those really messy life things that situations can change, and this situation absolutely changed for the worse. But I think the words successful, planned, non-cancerous surgery is what the public and the media ran with. Does it absolve us? Absolutely not. But I do think it's a piece of the puzzle that just being fair, looking at the situation, I think that is a piece we have to talk about.
Well, it's very hard because I've been trying to look at this from above when we were all very much in it. So it's hard to kind of look at it from above when I felt very in it as well. But I think if I'm trying to kind of put on that lens, the other thing to consider here is obviously the context of Charles having cancer and us feeling like with that knowledge of it being non-cancerous and successful, it sort of felt like these two things sat in very different categories, right? Charles was the serious one, Kate wasn't.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of that was subconscious and implicit, but that's what I think, without even realizing it, the public were in some way reacting to. I think obviously the other point here is that there's a level of humor we reserve for the royal family, Mish, that we don't reserve for any other celebrity.
No, not at all. Well, remember the jokes about Trisha Paytas giving birth and the Queen dying? This is taking us back maybe 18 months, 2 years. The memes and the kind of maybe comedic license that we give to commentary around the royals is unlike anyone else. I actually don't think we reserve that level of humor for any other group in the public eye. There is a license to go for the royal family, at least a social license given on Twitter, on TikTok, on Instagram, to say, do your absolute worst, be as politically incorrect and inappropriate as possible, and the public will get behind you. And I think that's something I'd love for us to circle back to later, because I wonder if that might change now that this story has developed in the way that it has.
Yeah.
So next, I want to talk about the fact that there is still a hangover of the 1990s. There is fear on some level that history will repeat itself and we will end up with another Diana, Charles, Camilla situation. There is concern that the culture of the palace will destroy the young women within it. And I think that's where the Kate in protest stuff that we talked about last week, that's where that stems from. This idea of we want to have the backs of the women in the palace because we're worried they're going to be ruined.
Well, they are. And we know that to be true.
Yeah. Well, we know it from Meghan. We know it from Diana. And so while I don't think all theories were defensive of Kate Middleton, I do think there is a portion of public commentary that was trying to keep her best interest in mind or was trying to get behind her, even though the effect was the absolute opposite. I do think the intentions weren't malicious. Now, you mix all of that together, you get a recipe for a viral and sometimes, if not often, cruel conversation. None of that even gets to the photoshopping debacle that happened in early March. I listened back to our segments to figure out where we got derailed, and it was that episode. It was the episode on March 14, grab your tinfoil hats.
The title doesn't do much for it. No.
After the photoshopping thing had happened. But the week before on March 7, we were laughing at the conspiracy theorists. We were saying, this is absurd. People think Katie Holmes is in this photo. Yeah, yeah. How do people think these photos are doctored? It's interesting that within 1 week, once we had the photoshopping mistake, we had gone from laughing at conspiracy theories to being on board with them. And I say that to be transparent with the listeners, myself more than anyone. I was the biggest proponent of conspiracy theories on this show. So I'll cop that.
No. I think we can go down together. I think we can absolutely go down together. But I think the thing for me is I do think it would be pretty absurd to say that the majority of the internet found humor in this because we led ourselves astray. I think we were fundamentally led astray. And again, I want to be really clear, that's not to say that we're not going to take any responsibility for this, but I also think, let's be real about this. Like, let's not kind of swing too far one way. Mm. We had a royal family doing bungled family Photoshop drops, then getting a kill notice from like the Associated Press saying these people were not to be trusted. And then we got a notes up apology from Kate, signed off on Instagram, saying that she edited the photo herself. I think at the core of this part of it as well is that a lot of people felt like they were trying to play us for fools. And we were like, well, fuck you, we're not fools. No. Like, we're not idiots, so stop trying to treat us like idiots. And I think the groundswell of this movement was built in that quite a lot, of being like, we're not fucking idiots, so stop trying to treat us like one. And I think that's where the absurdist element comes in here too. Trying to give us a notes up apology from Kate is pretty absurdist.
It is
like
absurd.
That is kind of, that was where the funniness came from, I think, as well.
The whole thing was absurd, you're right. And I think royalists have tried to minimise the photoshopping thing. Now in the wake of the news that we got on the weekend, royalists are essentially downplaying that incident as if it was an influencer putting a filter on a photo. And I think that's a blatant misrepresentation when you are an institution like the Palace sending this photo out to global news agencies. I mean, in the wake of that faked photo being sent to the world's press, the AFP's global news director went on the BBC and compared the British royal family's trustworthiness to the likes of Iran and North Korea. So when you have that happening in the media and you are a consumer of media, of course you are going to have what I believe still, even with this information we now have, a healthy distrust of the British royal family.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. And I guess that word healthy is really interesting in this context, because I would say this feels to me like the apex of our distrust in the monarchy. I think our trust in them has been eroding away for decades. I think I have never felt more distrusting of them after reading Prince Harry's memoir. I mean, it's not to say I loved him either, but I think that there was a lens I was given on the entire institution that I wouldn't have had otherwise. This institution has been in particular strife in the last year after that book came out. And I don't think I'm alone in that. And I think, unfortunately, Kate and this illness has been the victim of years of this, of years of our distrust and us hitting this threshold. And she's fallen victim to all of it.
Yeah.
The question we've been asking ourselves, and we had a conversation in the office between ourselves yesterday, Mish, was, okay, what would we have done differently? Like, looking at all of this now and having kind of really properly gone through it, what would we have done differently?
I think I would have done tone differently. I can't sit here and honestly say to the listeners that I wouldn't have asked the questions or wouldn't have covered the story at all. It is a massive story. And even knowing how it developed and what the facts are, I can't sit here and honestly say that I have sweeping regret across the board about everything. I got tone wrong in certain points. I don't think I should have gotten as much glee out of the mystery of it all. And I think a lot of people online were gleeful that there was such a mystery going on. And I think that's a lack of humanity maybe for the people at the heart of it. It's very easy to not treat the royals as humans, right? They live such absurdist, larger-than-life lives. I got tone wrong. And I think if I was doing it all again, I would strip tone back 20%.
Yeah, it's interesting because, again, I think it's really easy for us to say this with what we know to be true.
Hindsight's 20/20.
But there was also a world where this wasn't actually the reality. Mm. Like, let's be real about that. There was a world where this wasn't the reality too, and that is why people jumped on the bandwagon, and that is why people felt gleeful about it, because the whole thing did feel ridiculous. I agree with you. It's very hard for me to sit here and say I would do that much differently, because truthfully, we were just operating off the things we knew, which are the things we've laid out. Mm. And I can't sit on my high horse and say, oh, next time I'll do everything differently, because I can't promise that. I agree with you. Tone's a huge thing for us. And I think it's a huge thing to constantly keep in mind about the tone you're putting out into the world. Mm. And that will be top of mind for me going through this show constantly. But I don't know. I think it's, I can't lie either. I truly can't.
What I've learnt in this job is that you can never, ever squash innate human curiosity, particularly curiosity about celebrities. It will always pop up, and social media, particularly TikTok, dare I say, has become almost like a deadly accelerator for our innate curiosity. The Palace's PR team, when it came to Kate's health and her disappearance, left too much of a curiosity gap for the public. And when you leave too much of a gap, that gap will be filled with distrust, cruel jokes, and speculation. I don't know what can be done here because Kate did come out and say, well, I didn't share the cancer update because it was an update. It wasn't the original story. It was a revelation. I didn't share the revelation because I needed time with my children for them to wrangle with it.
So here's my question to you, both of you. If the palace came out and said emphatically much earlier, we are dealing with some pretty complex and serious health issues here and the speculation is deeply inappropriate, while also saying that Kate was trying to work through some of it herself as well as with her family, would that have changed a lot? Because I actually really do think that it would. I think people could be listening to this saying, well, that's just going to feed people more and they're going to guess about what's going on. Again, Mish, there will always be people that speculate, but the vast majority of people on the internet would have shut up.
I agree. And I think we've seen that. I was thinking as I was getting ready this morning, when else has the public learned that someone is significantly ill and handled it poorly? And I actually can't remember many instances with public figures. And I actually think we have such an interesting comparison at play here. We do have the most senior royal battling a cancer diagnosis in King Charles. And you made a point last week, Zara, that people have barely discussed King Charles's cancer diagnosis because I think at large, we can't account for everyone, but the majority of people have respect when they know someone, even a very famous person, is going through a significant health challenge. I do wholeheartedly believe that same privacy would have been afforded to Kate if we had been told, hey, official statement, this is quite a significantly worse situation than we first thought. The wording we used originally of successful, planned, non-cancerous.
You don't even need to say that, I don't think. I think it could have been a bit more simple. And again, you can never account for fucked tabloids and fucked corners of the internet. Like, they will always exist no matter what we're talking about. But I do think the average Joe would have probably calmed down a little bit with their tone and probably squashed themselves a little bit if we were given like a tiny bit more. And I don't think we should ever expect people to say every single detail about what's going on with them, but like a little bit more context when your life is wholly in the public eye, when you're living off taxpayer money, when you are in the monarchy. I think the other conversation we've been having is like, what does privacy look like? It doesn't look like the same thing.
No.
A lot of people are saying Kate deserves the same privacy as anyone else walking down the street. And I actually just fundamentally don't believe that to be true.
No, she definitely deserved privacy.
She deserves more than she got.
Absolutely, she does. But I agree with you. I think, again, that conversation lacks a bit of nuance. To say that Kate Middleton in the palace, you know, Princess of Wales, deserves as much privacy as Kate Smith, nurse from Toowoomba, is a lie. That's not factually correct.
Why did they come out and like announce her engagement and get married in the public eye? Like, not everybody has to do that.
No, but they also, they sit on a throne of literal taxpayer money. And unfortunately, the collateral when you live that life is that in exchange for the public footing the bill for your life, you give up aspects of your life.
And again, I want to be really clear. At no point do I expect every tiny detail, but just like some point towards saying, hey, this is sort of where this story is moving, I think would have been helpful. And I think what the palace could have done differently. Mish, back to the point you mentioned before when it comes to humour and the royal family and how much, I guess, we want to make them the butt of every joke.
Yeah.
How do we feel about that now? And do you think that will change?
I think it will slightly, maybe. I do find it fascinating how far the jokes can go with the royal family. And now that we know the situation with Kate, I'm not sure it would fly next time quite to the same degree. Again, I don't think anything's going to be a massive sweeping change, but I do think things would be tempered by 10 to 20%. What about you?
I think we have short memories.
Okay.
And I think that maybe, in the next 3 to 6 months, sure, we might see 10 to 15 to 20% less. I think we'll go back to where we once were, because I think there is something about the royal family and how many of their scandals have played out in the public eye that truly does make most people feel like they're a joke. Like, there is an element of like this entire, like, let's say you're an alien sitting on Mars and you're looking down at the royal family. Like, it is a bit of a ridiculous concept. Mm. I think you could say that. That, as well as the fact that so much of their shit plays out in the public eye, people are like, this is just, this whole thing is ridiculous. Mm. And there is an element of where we strip them of their humanity because of that. Mm. I'm not saying it's right, but I'm just saying that's how I feel like this will continue to play out. Eilish, what do you think?
Well, I'm actually reading, I happen to be reading Spare at the moment. And I have been struck a few times because it has such parallels to what's going on right now with Kate. First of all, Harry talks a lot about how there was a lot of paparazzi when he was a little boy with Diana. Diana died. There was this huge come to Jesus moment. Mm. And the paparazzi kind of calmed down. Everyone was like, oh my God, we're so awful. The tabloids are awful. Oh my God, this has to change. And then it didn't.
Yeah.
And I think that's the short memory thing that you're talking
crept
about.
Crept back up, yeah. Yeah.
And I also think that it's very interesting to hear Harry's perspective on how much impact a statement from the palace can make. Mm. He was saying...
So true, I remember that in the book.
Yeah, he was saying he and Meghan went to a tennis match, I think it was, something like that, and she was wearing ripped jeans and the tabloids tore her apart for it. Mm. And he said in Spare, if the palace had just released a statement saying that the outfit that she wore had been approved by the palace, he believed that that would have made a huge difference. Mm. So I don't know. It's interesting hearing Harry's perspective on that with now what we know about Kate.
It makes me wonder. I mean, Queen Elizabeth was really the one who spearheaded the saying, never complain, never explain.
I don't think
and I
it
actually
works
wonder,
anymore.
No, I think in an age of TikTok, yeah, where a video within an hour can get a million views and then just, you know, spark a whole bunch of new commentary, bunch of new conspiracy theories. I don't think never complain, never explain holds up anymore. It probably held up back in the days where, you know, we were operating on a newspaper printing cycle.
Yeah. Totally agree.
It doesn't hold up anymore.
I don't think it works. I actually think they're too soft now and actually look like they don't have as much of a backbone
they
as
look
they
like
should.
They're not in control. Yeah. They've completely lost control.
Totally. And I think I'm conscious of this conversation going on for ages, but one thing I did want to finish on is I'm sure there are people sitting here saying, well, why are you still talking about this? Like, she said she wants privacy and she said she doesn't want people to fixate on this anymore. And to that I would say, it's very important for us today to have a conversation about how we all got to a certain point that it got out of control. Mm. Of course, people will set it free now and sort of sit back and let that family do their thing as is their right, I believe now.
Afford her the same privacy we've afforded King Charles.
But it is our responsibility to acknowledge how this all happened.
And it would be very Weasley of us.
Oh, so
to
cowardly.
Not talk about this. Yeah. It would be, I know we got some people were saying, well, delete your Instagram memes or delete your stories. No, like we said it, we did it, we were part of it.
Yeah.
Holding ourselves accountable for this particular story to me is important. First of all, I don't regret everything. I do regret some of it. But like, let's have a conversation about it. I don't like this idea of, well, pull it down, erase it as if it never happened. No,
it
with
happened.
This particular story, let's be real. We got parts of it wrong. Lots of the public did. When we did Your Safe Friday last week, 70% of the listeners came back to us and said, yeah, I'm still on board with the conspiracy theory. Something's still up. The funniest part was that once the news had broken the next day, all of a sudden all these people were going back to that story and voting, no, I'm not part of the conspiracy anymore. It's like, no. We all got shit wrong.
Not everyone, I will say. Not everyone.
70% of us got shit wrong.
Yeah, there was a huge majority here. This was a huge movement. And I think there's lessons for all of us out of it. And the palace too.
Coming up after the break, Rebel Wilson's memoir is about to be out in the world and all eyes are on chapter 23. But first, a word from today's sponsor. Zara, time is flying and we've officially said goodbye to summer. Instead of picnics in the park, I am now looking forward to dinner dates at my favourite restaurants and having take-in at home.
That doesn't actually sound too bad. Our besties, Betty's Burgers, is here to make those plans all the more special and delicious with their newest zesty yuzu crispy chicken range.
This is not one you want to miss. My favourite is their brand new crispy chicken strips with the new special yuzu dipping sauce, which embodies a delicious zesty punch.
I cannot get enough of their their panko chicken burger with the new yuzu special sauce, where the crunchy chicken meets the citrus and heat flavour to create a divine combination that leaves you wanting more.
Yeah, this is a limited range that is only available for a short time, so get your besties together and head into Betty's to check out their mouth-watering range, or just get your usual because you deserve it.
Yeah, between their existing trusty classic range and the newest yuzu range, you'll have no trouble finding something for everyone with Betty's.
Head to your Betty's Burgers restaurant today and experience what casual dining is meant to be.
Thank you so much to our besties, Betty's Burgers, for making this episode of Shameless possible. Our second story, Euphoria Season 3, shoot delayed, HBO series still targeting 2025 return. That is from Deadline. Guys, look, I'm not a Euphoria stan, but I am very intrigued by this story. Same. I don't have much hope for Euphoria coming back after reading Deadline's newest piece. For context, it's been over 2 years since the show's second season premiered, and it was officially renewed for season 3. They haven't started production yet. To go back a bit as well, season 1 actually premiered in August 2019. Season 2 aired in Jan 2022. So fans are used to gaps between seasons, but this is getting quite sizable.
This is going to end up being like a 5-year gap, if at all.
Crazy. I mean, here's how Deadline opened their piece. With creator Sam Levinson still working on scripts for the upcoming third season of HBO's Euphoria, filming plans have been temporarily put on hold, with the cast given permission to take other acting jobs in the interim. HBO and Sam Levinson remain committed to making an exceptional third season. In the interim, we are allowing our in-demand cast to pursue other opportunities.
So Too Long didn't read. Zendaya and Jacob Elordi go take all those film ops that are coming your way.
But this is what's confusing, is because people are still saying, oh, it's still only a few months away, but they're allowed to take on other ops. As if Zendaya or Jacob Elordi or Sydney Sweeney or Hunter Schafer or whoever it might
be. Yeah, you're so right. There are so many massive stars.
Aren't signing on to something that's going to take them away for 6 to 12 months.
Exactly. That's the thing. I think it's so confusing as well because mid-Feb was when it was originally reported that filming would start very soon is the quote.
And Sydney Sweeney, I don't know if you guys saw this, at South by Southwest was asked after promoting her latest project, it was sort of like a horror film, she was asked what she's doing next and she goes, well, I go into Euphoria. So people heard that and thought, oh, we're into it. So it seems like there's been a bit of a miscom between a lot of people taking part in this.
100%.
The interesting thing to me about Euphoria is it's in this very unique position of accidentally, I guess, but on purpose, giving birth to absolute megastars. I mean, and then they weren't producing work fast enough to hold them down. I have not seen much like it. I mean, as I said, you've got Zendaya, Sydney Sweeney, Jacob Elordi, Hunter Schafer, Colman Domingo, who's just nominated for an Oscar. You have Storm Reid, who just won an Emmy for The Last of Us.
It's like the show became too big and it actually ended up burning itself by getting so big and so successful.
But I don't think many shows have been this slow. Yeah. You look at The White Lotus and how quickly they've managed to try and turn around these 3 seasons. I think you look at a lot of other shows and see this momentum and think, oh, we've got to sit on this.
Yeah.
And I'm not necessarily saying that is right, because sometimes when you're creative and you're trying to write a television show, you would rather it be good and slow than shit and fast. Mm. But there is something to be said here about what this show looks like if it doesn't come out for a couple of years. Jacob Elordi cracked a joke on The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon saying that he hoped they would start filming soon because they're going to have to, like, Benjamin Button him.
Yeah.
Like, he's no longer a school kid.
As you were reading out passages earlier, I Googled the ages. Zendaya's 27. Jacob Elordi is about to turn 27 as well. I know that we often have high school characters played by much older adults, but they're going to be, like, 30 playing 17-year-olds if we don't get this show off the ground quick.
I know, and the other thing I want to make space for, of course, as well, is that Sam Levinson, yes, has been working on The Idol quite a lot, which is, you know, an interesting decision in and of itself. But we also did have the writer's strikes. They also did have the death of Angus Cloud. They also did have the death of producer Kevin Turin. I think there's obviously layers here. Colman Domingo told GQ that Sam Levinson has been rewriting and rewriting and rewriting and rewriting these scripts. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but I don't think we're seeing this being shot for another year.
I don't think we're seeing it ever.
Yeah. Our third story. Ex-Nickelodeon child stars allege abuse in shocking new documentary. That is from the Sydney Morning Herald.
Content warning, guys. This one deals with some really heavy themes and child abuse. So fast forward 6 minutes if you don't want to listen to this one. So you've likely seen stuff about Quiet on Set floating around. It's been hard to understand the controversy here in Australia because the four-part doco series doesn't actually air here until next week. It's landing on Binge. We have all watched parts of it. We used VPNs to watch it early. We're going to give you the rundown here. The series focuses on the culture at Nickelodeon in the 90s, noughties, and 2010s. It zones in on one man in particular, Dan Schneider. Dan Schneider was a major heavyweight at Nickelodeon for a quarter of a century. He was a teen actor turned writer and director. He created many of the shows we loved as kids. The Amanda Show, starring Amanda Bynes, Drake and Josh, iCarly, which was starring Miranda Cosgrove and Jeanette McCurdy, Victorious with Ariana Grande. He also wrote and co-produced the movie Big Fat Liar, one of my favorite childhood movies.
Oh, gosh.
That was with Frankie Muniz and, again, Amanda Bynes in 2002.
I think it would be fair to say that Dan Schneider for Nickelodeon printed money. Mm. Like, he really was the brains behind
the operation.
The reason any of us even were drawn to Nickelodeon kids. We read Jeanette McCurdy's memoir a couple of years ago. Eilish, have you read it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I was like, this is very you.
Yeah.
And it was very clear that she had issues with someone that resembled Dan Schneider quite a lot. I don't think she named him in the book, but I think other people tried to.
She essentially said as well she was offered money to keep quiet about certain things that made her uncomfortable on set, including being given alcohol when she was underage and being asked to give massages and things like that. Now, Quiet on Set is a dark docuseries. Episode one opens with some of the sexual jokes a very young Ariana Grande performed on TV. One was her juicing a potato, and that potato was quite phallic and was just deeply inappropriate. Anyone who's watched it will know what I'm talking about. The other clip showed her pouring a bottle of water on her neck as she laid down in bed and squealed. Other claims in this documentary range from Dan Schneider being demonstrative on set. Some of the female writers said that he used to say women weren't capable of comedic writing like men were. Two women claim that he was paying them one salary and said they had to split it. He was playing pranks on female writers that made them deeply uncomfortable, asking them for massages, and generally being a bit of a workplace bully. Now, these are all allegations, and I'll get to Dan Schneider's response to them in a little bit. But what I need to make crystal clear before I detail the next suggestion made in the documentary is that Dan Schneider denies it. Because there are suggestions in this series that Dan's relationship with a then-child Amanda Bynes was very close and perhaps inappropriate. Amanda didn't take part in the series, so it's tricky to know exactly what to make of things like that, but multiple people spoke to a closeness between Amanda and Dan that made them uncomfortable.
Yeah, I mean, Dan is the one that's credited as the person that kind of took it upon himself to transition Amanda from child star to grown film star. And he was apparently, according to this documentary, at least the person who spearheaded Amanda Bynes petitioning the court for emancipation from her parents, which failed, which is an interesting dynamic in and of itself. The situations that these kids were put in are actually incredibly tough to watch, especially with hindsight. I mean, I would have been a kid when I was consuming some of this. I mean, I wasn't that much of a Nickelodeon kid, but these shows. Mm. Watching some of these scenes and the way that these child stars were humiliated at the age of 29, I just am flabbergasted that this went to air and it's taken us this long to call it out.
It's crazy. There was one incident where a child star was covered top to toe in peanut butter. He was partially naked, partially unclothed, by the way, covered in peanut butter, and then was forced to lie there while dogs licked the peanut butter off his body on television. On top of all this, I mean, that's all horrible enough, right? It also turns out there were multiple child abusers on set. One was a pedophile named Jason Handy. He was given access to these child stars that was very alarming. He molested two girls, for which he received a 6-year sentence behind bars. Another Nickelodeon employee, the animator Ezel Channel, went to prison for more than 7 years for his 2009 conviction for sexually abusing teenage boys at the studio. We then had Drake Bell, the former star of Drake and Josh, speaking for the first time about being sexually assaulted by the acting coach, Nickelodeon's acting coach, Brian Peck. That matter went to court in 2004. Peck was found guilty. He spent 16 months in prison, was registered as a sex offender. More than 40 people wrote character letters for him, including some public figures, which has been the subject of commentary online. They asked a judge for leniency in his sentencing. The bit that really got me was that after Brian Peck was released from prison for assaulting Drake Bell, he got a job on Disney's Sweet Life of Zack and Cody.
Yep. Yeah, now one of the more troubling and alarming details here is that Drake's father, who also participated in this docuseries, says he raised alarm with the Nickelodeon staff about Brian Peck's behaviour towards his son but was dismissed. It is a really dire story. We know that Drake Bell pled guilty to attempted child endangerment a few years ago for inappropriately communicating with an underage girl. So it is messy and complicated.
He also says in the documentary that his behaviour with how he's behaved inappropriately towards children stems from him being molested when he was a child, being abused when he was a child. On all of this, Dan Schneider did come out and gave an apology, both a written apology and a YouTube apology. Part of it was wrong. I ever put anyone in that position. And he said that he would never do the same thing today.
Our fourth story, Sacha Baron Cohen denies Rebel Wilson's claims about his behaviour on set. That is from the Sydney Morning Herald. A lot going on here. I don't know if you guys saw this headline around this week, but to tell this story and to kind of detail it for you guys, I want to take you back a little bit. Last October, Rebel Wilson announced her memoir, Rebel Rising. In announcing the book, she said on Instagram, "For the first time, I've written about my journey. Everything from weight gain and loss, sexuality, fertility issues, overcoming shyness, rejections, etc. And of course, I've put in some juicy celeb stuff too." It is the celebrity stuff we are talking about today. So fast forward about a week and a half ago, and the book is quite close to being out in the world. Rebel jumped on Instagram and said this as part of the promo for her book.
So when I first came to Hollywood, people were like, yeah, I have a no asshole policy. Means like, yeah, I don't work with assholes. I was like, oh yeah. Yeah, I mean, that sounds sensible, logical. But then it really sunk in what they were meaning by that, older people in the industry, because I worked with a massive asshole. And yeah, now I definitely have a no assholes policy. The chapter on said asshole is chapter 23.
Cool. So no one was named or anything. There wasn't a huge amount of chatter, but it was kind of simmering a little bit online.
I think she was also using this definitely as like a hook for the book. I mean, who doesn't love a celebrity memoir where the celebrity is ragging on another celebrity, named or unnamed, gives you license to speculate, and people do.
1,000%. Then this story went up about 1,000 gears because on Monday, Rebel posted on her Instagram story writing, "I will not be bullied or silenced by high-priced lawyers or PR crisis managers. The asshole that I'm talking about in one chapter of my book is Sacha Baron Cohen."
It's giving, it's Rebecca Vardy.
Rebecca Vardy's account.
Yeah. Yep. Oh, sorry. Yeah. Fuck. Got to be careful with that one.
It was that wording that saved her from defamation.
Yeah, I think it was. Now, these two actually worked together like 10 years ago. In 2016, they starred as husband and wife in a film called Grimsby. Now, that film has different names depending on what country you live
in. Does it? Yeah. I never know why they do that.
I think it's like a trademarking thing. I don't know. I don't know why. I don't know why I took that.
I'm pretty sure
anyway,
it's this.
Plus or minus 40% there. Yeah. So these two work together quite closely. And we should say, in response, Sasha's team came out quite emphatically and rejected her claims, of which I will get to in a second, right? Mm. Because this story is played out in a funny timeline. They said, "While we appreciate the importance of speaking out, these demonstrably false claims are directly contradicted by extensive detailed evidence, including contemporaneous documents, film footage, and eyewitness accounts from those present before, during, and after the production of Grimsby."
Right. So I saw all of this, right? I saw her Instagram story. I saw this very heavily, seriously worded response. And I genuinely wondered if this was all a PR thing, that Sasha and Rebel are secretly friends. And this was like, you pretend I'm an asshole, I'll come out with this thing, we'll do a little bit in the public eye. And then I dug a little deeper. I'm like, oh, fuck, this is actually way more serious and definitely not a PR stunt.
I totally see where you felt that, though. Like, these two are comedians who
I mean, take the piss.
Yeah, Sacha Baron Cohen does stunts all the time. This is not a stunt at all. Now, going back, what people have done is actually tracked some of the things that rebels actually said about Sacha Baron Cohen in the public eye over the last sort of 9 or 8 years. Rebel has talked about what it was like shooting that movie. In 2014, she spoke to the Kyle and Jackie O show. Now, I know those years might sound a bit funny. The movie came out in 2016. It spent a long time in post-production, I think probably because the film was shit.
And I was about to be like, I've never heard of Grimsby. And yeah. That's a good reason.
Rebel Wilson said that Sacha Baron Cohen was so persistent about, like, allegedly getting them to shoot naked scenes. She said he was so persistent that she would call their shared agent and tell her how much he was harassing her. She went on to the Kyle and Jackie O show. Every day he's like, just go naked, it'll be funny. Remember in Borat when I did that naked scene? It was hilarious. On the last day, I thought I'd obviously won the argument and he got a body double to do the naked scene.
Yikes.
It was after that, though, that she alleged that he asked her to stick her finger up his bottom in the final scene. She said, and I went, what do you mean, Sasha? That's not in the script. And he's like, look, I'll just pull down my pants. Just stick your finger up my butt. It'll be really funny. Wilson said they finally reached a compromise where she sort of like slapped him on the butt. But she has spoken about this making her feel uncomfortable. And I think, yeah, obviously this is why Sasha's team have come out so quickly and emphatically denied it all, because they know that this was the stuff that's been circulating over the last 9 or 10 years. So likely this is the stuff that might be mentioned in the book.
Do you reckon there's a world? I mean, obviously this has gotten lawyers, like lots of lawyers involved. Do you think they're trying to get the chapter pulled? Because yes. This book is literally supposed to hit shelves. I'm trying to find the date. I think it's April 4th.
It's April. It's like next month.
2nd of April.
Yeah.
April. What are you going to – it's kind of like a very stressful situation for everyone involved. I mean, if he says he didn't do it, she says he did, they're trying to get the book pulled. The book's supposed to be out on Tuesday.
I think this will be a wait and see, to be honest.
This will be really interesting.
I don't think this will be the last time we hear of it. And our fifth story, Gwyneth Paltrow thinks dill should be illegal. That is from Yahoo. Guys, last week, Gwyneth Paltrow appeared on Hot Ones. You know that American YouTube talk show hosted by Sean Evans where they basically, I don't know, eat lots of chicken wings. Coated in hot sauce.
Yeah, and you start with the most mild hot wing and then you move up to like, they've got names for them, but there's one that's like the killer or something along those lines. That's so wrong.
Yeah.
Plus or minus 100%.
Firstly, the thing I wanted to say is watching this stuff just, again, kind of like the Anne Hathaway thing that I was saying before, reminds me why I do have a soft spot as well for Gwyneth Paltrow. Obviously, we've spoken at length on this show about how problematic some of her health stuff is.
Yeah.
But at her core, she is quite a funny human being to watch.
No, doing our scandal series on her, unfortunately for everyone who will be annoyed by this, I love her. She's like my quirky auntie who says the most unhinged shit, but I'm like, that's just Gwyneth.
I think we said at the end of the scandal series, we'd love to have a drink with her. Like, she would be quite funny. Watching this reminded me why we said that, because she was a laugh. Now, anyway, she's making headlines for one controversial food opinion, but fun for all of us, it's not problematic. She said this.
I love all herbs except for dill, which should be illegal.
Oh, why should dill be illegal?
Because it's so gross. It ruins everything and anything it touches.
It's a dominant kind of flavor.
Dominant and like just bad. I don't understand why people like it. I love cilantro, and I know some people have that reaction to cilantro. I know it's boring, but basil is my favorite.
That's not boring.
It's just
boring
so...
Don't apologize for that.
Fragrant and almost like... It's so optimistic.
What is with the Nara Smith music playing in the background?
I love this so much. So I thought today, given we are so known for really strong finishes.
Oh,
in
yes,
the show,
yes, yes.
Let's talk about our favorite and least favorite quotes.
I love this. I don't like dill. There is a sandwich shop around the corner from us that does a chicken and dill sandwich. And as soon as I bit in, I was reminded it's like a passionate hatred for Dil. It just fucking sucks.
The thing about this is I controversially don't feel like there's a lot of herbs that I should hate that I actually don't love or hate. I sit okay. in the middle of like mm-hmm. coriander. I'm never like throwing it over everything, but some things I feel like it's right for.
I Dil, like coriander. Oh, do we all endorse coriander?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, coriander like positive endorse. Show. Yep.
Dil, I'm again like in the right salad or whatever. I quite like it.
Okay.
Gil, what do you think about Dil?
Gil's Dil verdict.
I love all herbs. I am partial to basil because it's my dog's name.
Oh, so true.
But
oh.
I will say that Basil, my dog, is not optimistic in any way. He's a very nervous rescue greyhound. Oh.
They're working in opposition. I would say my top two, I agree with...
This feels big. The stakes feel high. Your top two. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. But they're so far above the rest. Oh, okay. I'll give you my top three in order.
Okay.
I agree with Gwyneth. It's basic, but Basil is just very hard to... It's just so optimistic. No, it's just versatile. My second would be rosemary. Very close second.
Yep.
I could have rosemary on a lot of things. And the third is parsley.
Okay, I actually think you and I align. Can I put one in the enemy category?
Yes.
Mint.
No.
I fucking hate mint.
No.
I hate mint. I love it. I love it if it's in my mouth just to be a mint. But if it is mint on top of meat, get the fuck out.
I love that. I love mint. Okay. No,
any I don't like
that.
Any
in your enemy category, Gil?
No, I'm not. I don't feel badly towards any herbs. I it's love all herbs.
All herbs are equal.
I will say that I love thyme. I feel like thyme is underrated.
Can I also give a shout out to chives?
Yes.
No.
Oh. Why?
I actually think that's falling towards the bottom for me.
Oh,
a chive.
No. Chives in like a... Like noodles or something?
Like maybe, to be honest, chives, the greatest thing going for a chive is the fact it's good for presentation.
It's beautiful for presentation.
And some oregano on a roasted chip. I'll finish there.
I didn't realize lavender's a herb.
Oh, well, there you go. Guys, that is all we've got time for
today.
I think
we need to start ranking our endings.
I thought that was quite good.
I thought this was good.
Come and talk to us. I want to know what you think about herbs, just like Gwyneth Paltrow. And that's it. You can come and find us on Instagram at Shameless Podcast, on TikTok at Shameless_podcast. Subscribe to Shame More. That's our subscription part of the show. You get all your scandals in one go. You get bonus episodes.
All of Gil's genius in one hit.
Exactly. We will be back in your ears on Monday for another episode of Scandal.
Gil, are you back next Thursday?
Yeah, she is. Her.
What, Gil's last rodeo for a little while.
Oh, yeah.
Thursday episode. Gil's back and then Annabelle's back from her holiday.
Bye.
Bye.
Shameless Media.
This podcast was recorded on Wurundjeri land. Always was, always will be Aboriginal land.
Oh, hi, it's Annabelle Lee and Louis Hansen here. We are your hosts of Everybody Has a Secret.
Woo!
Woo! We are here essentially just to let you know that we drop episodes every week now. Every damn Friday morning, we are in your ears.
That is so exciting. What a time to be in your ear holes. So essentially, each episode, we unpack the real life secrets of our listeners. So this is for everyone who loves, you know, just a little bit of gossip in their lives, which, let's be real, Annabelle, is all of us.
It's absolutely all of us. Don't lie. You all love gossip. So if you want to listen to our show, please do head to your favourite podcast app and listen now.
See you there.
Bye.